It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Lift off.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it.
Say my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner. PJ Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on the Twitter at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is also available at Locked On Rockets. And by now, you guys know the drill. If you appreciate what we do here, subscribe to us on all the major podcasting platforms, write us a review, leave us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. So first off, before I get into the topic for today's show, I do need to apologize for no show yesterday on Wednesday. So as I, got up early in the morning, there have been a couple times where I've put the podcast out a bit later. It's usually out around right at 7 a.m. Central, 7:30 a.m. Central, almost every day. And this one, I was just had a rough night, tossed and turned a little bit. And I was like, you know what? Okay, it's got to come out a little bit later. So I was going to do it a little bit later that morning, published around noon. And then when I get up to finally, roll myself out of bed to do the podcast, I had no internet thanks to Xfinity. So I do apologize about that, because then that extended well into the evening. So I had a fun little quarantine day off from work at home with no internet. It was largely unbearable because I also only had like one bar of service for much of the day anyways. And then as my internet returned, so did my cell service somehow. Like, I don't know, I only had one bar of service all day, and then finally my internet kicks back on at like 8 p.m. and I suddenly have four bars of cellular data and Wi-Fi again. So it was all kinds of stupid. Anyways, for today's topic, I want to kind of dive into James Harden's season as a whole. So I kind of want to look at the expectations of him headed into the season, how he performed to this point in the season, and the improvements or changes that, we should expect or would be ideal if the season returns. Which, here's the thing, is I'm still leaning towards the season will return. I think that obviously with COVID-19 and how widespread it is becoming across the United States, there's a lot of questions and issues surrounding that. But I do think that depending on how isolated the actual NBA is as an organization, now, there were breaking news stories. So, four Brooklyn Nets were diagnosed with COVID-19. More and more players, officials, celebrities. I mean, it is becoming widespread. So depending on how isolated it can become, if they get enough players tested, if enough organizations kind of jump through the hoops to find themselves in a position to be available to restart the season, then I think it's going to happen. Austin Rivers was, recently on his Instagram Live, not the set of Instagram Lives that I put on my Twitter feed, but as of late Wednesday evening, was on his Instagram Live feed and said something along the lines of he expects the season to kind of come back within like a 5 to 6 week time frame from the recording of this podcast, and essentially that he thinks the NBA would do a modified remaining regular season schedule, so only come back and play about 10 or so games and then jump straight into the playoffs from there. So a modified regular season, still play the playoffs, and then starting next season in December, which is kind of the way that a lot of people have been thinking this is going to go. In the medium, though, there are some interesting tidbits of news. So Adam Silver did say that there has been some discussion about maybe doing a one-off, like, all-star game style format incorporating all the players who have tested negative for coronavirus, because basically you could get them all in one location, make sure it's just, essential staff there, I guess, everybody's been tested, and you have this one-off, celebrity basketball fundraiser to, you know, generate awareness as well as, you know, provide a bit of entertainment and a, you know, a brief respite. It's a respite, I think. I think that's the word. Anyways, kind of a brief, we'll go reprieve because I know that one for sure. Anyways, a brief reprieve from what's been going on with COVID-19 and all this other stuff. So, you know, kind of a distraction from everything that's been going on. And I think that sounds like a fun idea. I don't know how hard it would be to implement in the midst of everything going on. Again, talking about the NBA season restarting, you know, 2 months down the line is one thing, but talking about gathering as many professional NBA athletes as possible to put together a one-off All-Star game in the middle of it all might be a bit more challenging. But now, getting into James Harden and, you know, the expectations coming into the season for him and, you know, by extension, obviously, for the Rockets, it was interesting because coming into the season, there was no monster in Golden State. There suddenly was no championship favorite. Now, you can make the argument that, yes, coming into the season, on paper, Milwaukee and LA did look like favorites. I had my doubts about how quickly LA would mesh with LeBron and AD, but they've largely proven me wrong. So, yes, there were some maybe some clear-cut upper echelon teams, the Rockets being one of them, but the expectations weren't there like they were in previous years where it was, okay, to win it all, you're going to go through Golden State at some point. Suddenly, it was a free-for-all, right? So the Rockets, who have been largely enamored with matching up and beating Golden State for years now, found themselves in the odd predicament of not having that foe at the top of their list anymore, which means suddenly there is no more Goliath for David to have to take down. There is no more Golden State for James Harden to try and take down. So that was one kind of going into the season expectation where suddenly there is no clear-cut favorite. The Rockets were very much in the discussion with all the other top Western Conference teams. You know, Rockets, Lakers, Clippers were kind of the big three talked about. And then past that, you had people, you know, really thinking the Nuggets were going to make some noise, the Jazz. And largely to this point, all those teams really have. And then a team that nobody expected, Oklahoma City. They're actually, you know, in the fifth seed right now. I don't have the seedings pulled up. It's fifth seed, I'm pretty sure. But they have, you know, those teams have all largely fulfilled their expectations to this point. I think the Rockets have fallen a little bit below where we would have expected them. But for James Harden specifically, I think that his expectations were, you know, you put forth another MVP caliber season, which he did until he had a certain drop-off points. You know, for a guy who's been in the MVP discussion for the past four seasons in a row, minus the one season, you know, the season we don't talk about, the 2015-2016 season, you know, a guy who's been in the MVP discussion consistently for years now, the expectation for him coming in is obviously put in another MVP season. I don't think anybody thought that he was going to average almost 40 a game for a chunk of the season, which he did. I did think he was going to average more than 36, but I didn't think he was going to reach 40 or 39.6, whatever it was, whatever the cap was there for a little bit before he kind of started falling back down to earth in January. But I think the other expectation was, how was he going to mesh with Russell Westbrook? And that was the big one, right? Because even though we'd seen James Harden and Chris Paul, two ball-dominant guards, play well together for 2 years, it was different with Chris Paul. Because Chris Paul, and we've spoken about this before, myself, Ben DuBose on this podcast has spoken about it, Chris Paul is better suited to play an off-ball style role next to James Harden. Russell Westbrook is not. Russell Westbrook does not get to play that spot-up shooter role. So I think there were some worries about just how those two would mesh together going into the season, and those worries were largely justified. Now, because of the Rockets' staggering system and keeping one of them on the court at all times, I wasn't as worried as other media members or his other fans were, just because I knew that they'd figure it out. You know, Clyde Drexler said a long, long time ago that when you get two all-star type players together, they will figure it out. And largely, I think to this point, Harden and Westbrook have figured out how to coexist. Now, some of the moves that have been made to get them to that point where, you know, Westbrook is now comfortable with all the extra spacing, things like that, those were made along the way to maximize the potential between this star duo. And I think it's worked out almost better than I could have imagined coming into the season, because I did have some reservations about how Westbrook was going to work, the fact that he is essentially a non-shooter, things like that. And I'll get into that when I do somewhere a little bit further down the line. I'm going to do one of these focusing on Westbrook a bit. But back to James, how was he going to mesh with Westbrook? I think that's worked out. I think there are a couple areas that he can improve upon, which we'll get to in the third segment regarding that pairing specifically. But I think that the expectation, again, was for him to turn in an MVP caliber season, which he really did for most of the season. He had his dip in January, which we'll get to in the next segment. And, you know, there have been some ups and downs, but largely he has continued to turn in an excellent performance for this season as a whole. Again, some games up, some games down, but largely a good performance. And I'll get into the specifics of those performances. And I've kind of narrowed down James's season to, I think I've got it broken up into like five or six different spurts. And so we'll get to that coming up in just one moment. So you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, focusing on James Harden's season as a whole, the expectations coming in, how he's performed to this point, and what we, you know, essentially need out of him, or the improvements that we would like to see him make moving forward. So first things first, just looking at his raw stats, you know, looking at like just the traditional per game stats, there's not any significant increases or really drop-offs anywhere to be noted. I mean, his three-point shooting is maybe a little bit down compared to last season. His per-game scoring average is down almost 2 points compared to last season, but that was largely, again, the struggles that he put forth in January kind of tanked his scoring average. I still think it was phenomenal that he was averaging, you know, at one point over 39 points a game. That in and of itself was insane. Didn't think it was even possible for him to, you know, eclipse his 36 PPG that much. But really, just his per game averages in a traditional sense, as well as his averages, you know, his advanced stats, you know, not super different compared to last season. So that being said, I wanted to break things down from this season. And I said I thought I had it at five or six. So I have it broken down into five significant stretches. And I didn't really do this in the sense of trying to find, you know, any bias in these stretches of, oh, okay, the Rockets played poorly in these stretches, so I picked, you know, no, I picked the stretches where James specifically had his ups and had his downs. So the first stretch of games, it's a small stretch, were the first three games of the season. I think we can all remember back to the first three games of the season. James Harden did not start the season well. In the first three games, he scored 19 points, then 29 points, and then 40 points. The 29 and the 40 seem okay on the surface, but then you remember back to the fact that I don't know if he was playing games with us or whatnot, but he decided to only hit 1 3-pointer in game 1, 2 3-pointers in game 2, and then 3 3-pointers in game 3. Now, that'd be all fine and dandy if he didn't also subsequently attempt 8 3-pointers in game 1, 18 3-pointers in game 2, and 14 3-pointers in game 3. So his shooting percentage average for the first three games of the season was 15% from behind the arc. Not a great start to the year by any stretch of the imagination, especially considering that the loss against Milwaukee, while there were some bright spots to pull out of that, that was really the first glimpse that we got at Russell Westbrook in a Rockets jersey, really playing full speed basketball, because he didn't really get to do that in preseason. So there were some, you know, bright spots to pick from the Milwaukee game, but largely there was, you know, I had some concern about how James was going to start the season. So that's kind of where I had his first little stretch highlighted. The next stretch is ridiculously large because it's a 30 game sample, and it's basically all of November and all of December, because that is the stretch where James really turned it on. The Rockets picked up their play. They only had, what was it? Let me see. 8 losses in that stretch? 9 losses. Sorry, there we go. The Rockets largely picked up their play, and so did James, because, again, this team lives and dies by what James Harden does on the court. We've been over this. In this stretch, this 30-game stretch from, in fact, there was one game in October during this stretch, and that was the Washington game that was insane, where James dropped 59 points. In this stretch, James Harden for 2 months averaged 39 points a game, 6 rebounds a game, almost 7.5 assists per game, 2 steals, almost a block, shot 40% from behind the arc. 40%. That's unbelievably good on 13.5 three-point attempts per game. So he did that for 30 games in a row. And the Rockets largely looked really good for stretches of that. Now, coinciding with this was Russell Westbrook trying to find himself in the Rockets offense. So that was kind of the theme, the early season theme, much of November, much of December, was Westbrook trying to find himself. And then when he did find himself in January, it sucks because that's when James Harden just, whether he ran out of gas in the tank or was struggling with you know, physical ailments or just wasn't right mentally, whatever that stretch was, it coincided with Westbrook playing well. And that is unfortunate because, again, James's January did not look good. So that's the next breakdown that I have. So it went from the two-month stretch, November, December, where James played out of his mind, to his next slump, which was basically all of January. So in that January, 12 games played, he only averaged 28.5 points per game. He was rebounding the ball a bit more, 8 boards a game, assists a bit down at 6.5, but the shooting numbers, that's where the big concern was, is his efficiency took a gigantic plummet. Because again, 28.5 points a game for almost anybody else in the league would be like a team-leading points per game metric. But for James, that's well below his normal, what we've come to expect of him. And it was the efficiency, too, that was the hardest part to stomach, because he was shooting 27% from behind the three-point line and only 36% from the floor in all of January. So as Russell Westbrook hit his stride with the team and started playing better, James Harden hit probably his roughest point as a Houston Rocket. I can't remember another single stretch of time where James struggled for that long. Now, he's had, you know, ups and downs in his game, but I don't ever remember there being a stretch where he really, just that month specifically, he looked at times disinterested. I do think that one of my largest frustrations with James as the franchise player for the Rockets organization, as just, you know, a star player in general, is I feel like he lets his offense dictate too much of how he plays defensively. I think that mentally, sometimes he can be taken out of a game if you take out his offense, if you really, really limit James Harden offensively. He checks himself out mentally sometimes on the other end of the basketball court. And for a guy who largely has been, you know, in the MVP discussions for the past however many years, you know, has had this, you know, this swagger about him, that January felt off because it felt like the swagger wasn't quite there. And I think that maybe to an extent, the insane amount of double teams that he started seeing this past season, where teams were throwing, you know, two guys at him before he even hit the half court margin, I think that was taking some of his love of the game out from under him, you know, unwillingly. It's not like he, you know, I'm sure he hates, you know, having to pass out of the double team and then stand, you know, 15 feet away from the three-point line at the half-court margin as a decoy so that the rest of the team can play 4-on-5, or sorry, 4-on-4, I should say, or passing out of the double team so that, you know, Westbrook can play 4-on-3. That's probably not fun basketball for him. At the same time, he's also been on record as saying that he doesn't exactly enjoy playing the, you know, the unguardable tour version of basketball where he does everything himself and everybody else does nothing. So I think there's a happy middle ground that he would, in, you know, truly love playing, and we've seen that for stretches. But I do think, kind of circling back to the main point, that when he's removed from the game on the offensive side of the court, I think that he does let that impact his desire, his drive to play defensively at times. And so I think in January specifically, we saw a lot of that, a lot of struggles on both sides of the court from James. And it's kind of this, it's a snowball effect. It compounds itself. James is struggling offensively, doesn't try as hard on the defensive side of the basketball, maybe gives up some easy buckets here and there. And then that's a snowball effect for the rest of the team. And as the leader of the team, that's where I wish that James would hang his hat a bit more. And I'm kind of skewing things up now because this is the second segment where I'm supposed to just go through his season as a whole, and I'm getting to the part where, you know, I think he needs some improvements. Actually, you know what? Yeah, I'll 86 that. We're going to get to that in the third segment. An area that I think he does need to hang his hat on more a little bit is as a leader of the team. We'll get to that in the third segment. I'll continue breaking down his season first off. So there's the January, right? Sorry for the big tangent there, but the point still stands. So there's his January, struggled in January, and then he had a bit of a bounce back. So we get to February, and James is actually having a bit of a resurgence, a bit of a bounce back. And the Rockets had a really strong February. They went 9-2 with James Harden playing, which is pretty impressive considering that the two losses were against the Utah Jazz on a buzzer beater and the Phoenix Suns on the second night of a back-to-back without Russell Westbrook. Those are two losses that you can kind of stomach. And you're like, all right, yeah, that's, you know, those aren't bad losses by any stretch. So you deal with those two losses, and James's averages were back up. He was averaging 32 points a game in this month. He was back up to shooting 37% from behind the arc. His regular field goal percentage was up to 46%. So, you know, James Harden was returning to form, essentially. And in this stretch was when the Rockets fully committed to playing small ball. So the Clint Capella trade is consummated, and Robert Covington joins the team in the, what was it, one game, two game, yeah. So they had the wins against the New Orleans Pelicans and the Charlotte Hornets to start off the month of February, and then it was February 6th at the LA Lakers. That was the first official game with Robert Covington, and we all know how that went. The Rockets came away with a big win. It was impressive, and then they kind of had the letdown the following night against Phoenix, whatever. That month was good because it looked like things were finally back on track. They had the impressive 6-game winning streak to kind of ride out the month, but it was that right before halftime against Boston, and we've highlighted this before, that James Harden fell on his shooting wrist right at half against the Boston Celtics, and that was right before he hit his final stretch of the season, which I will highlight as the 4-1 stretch. Sorry, 1-4 stretch. Got my numbers flipped. So that was the 1-4 stretch where the Rockets lost to the Knicks, the Clippers, the Hornets, and the Magic. 4 games in a row. And James Harden's averages over these 5 games, because they did finish things off before the season was officially suspended, they did have the win against the Timberwolves in which James Harden did play well, and it looked like he was going to have another return to form and that he had finally broken out of whatever the slump was, again, whether it was mental, physical, just dead legs, I don't know. But in this stretch of 5 games, including the win against the Timberwolves, he was averaging 28 a game, so scoring average back down. The shooting average was what concerned me the most because he was shooting 25% from behind the arc. And the thing was, is if you factor out the win against the Timberwolves in which he shot 50% from behind the arc, suddenly he's down to 19%. So across those 4 games, that 4-game losing streak right before the suspension happened, James was only shooting 19% from behind the arc. I firmly believe that he was playing injured and that his shooting wrist was messed up, because there's no other explanation for how you go from shooting 37% for the entire month of February and then you fall clearly on your shooting wrist at half against Boston and then suddenly start shooting 19% from behind the arc. It's the only logical explanation. And, you know, I'll get on this in the third segment. And you know what? I keep wanting to make my points about where I wish James would improve. And I can't do that because I'm trying to keep things segmented and do it properly. Anyways, so that's the stretch right there. Those are his stretches of the season. And I do have his best game and his worst game of the season both highlighted, and we'll get to that in the top of the next segment, actually, because I'm running a bit long in this segment. So we'll get to that coming up in the top of the next segment, so you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Final segment here, breaking down James Harden's season, kind of the areas that I would like to see him improve upon now. And this segment, I'll let this one kind of run long, but because I feel like throughout some of the highlighting of the stretches of his season, there were some areas that I wanted to touch on. But first, I do have his, in my opinion, his best game of the season and worst game of the season. And to me, it's not just numbers in those games, it's context behind the two games. And his best game and worst game, to me, actually take place against the same team. So I'll start with his best game, you know, good news first. So I think his best game of the season actually came pretty early on in November against the Clippers. So it's the Rockets' 12th game of the season, and it was a win. The first time they met up against the Clippers was here in Houston, and it was a Rockets win 102-93. So in this game, James Harden averaged, or not averaged, I should say, scored. James Harden scored 47 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, shot 16 of 17 at the free throw line, 7 of 13 from behind the arc, 12 of 26 overall. Had a huge game. And the reason I think this is his best, because you can point at a number of other games to be James Harden's best game of the season. You can point to the 60 points he dropped on Atlanta. You can point to the, you know, couple times, the handful of times he scored 50 this season. There have been, you know, too many 40-point games to count to remember off the top of my head. There's a lot of different games that you could point to as his best game of the season, and maybe there's some that are a bit statistically more impressive than this one, but I think the context behind this one meant so much to this team, because coming into the season, it was largely, okay, the Lakers, the Clippers, and then the Rockets were like a distant third being talked about as far as the Western Conference is concerned. And so I think this was more or less a statement game. And in a game where you didn't have Daniel House Jr., you didn't have Eric Gordon, Russell Westbrook struggled in this game. He only scored, 17 points on 6 of 20 shooting. So you're missing a couple important guys, and James Harden just absolutely goes off. Now, yes, the Clippers didn't have Paul George in this one, but I think that the losses that the Rockets had, as well as, you know, the Clippers missing Paul George, kind of offset things. So I think both teams were kind of, you know, equal in that sense. And the Clippers came in at 7-4, the Rockets came in at 8-3. So overall, I think that things were kind of even, and James Harden really put on a show, which I think, as far as the context behind this game, meant a lot, because it really showed, hey, take the Rockets seriously. The Rockets are just as capable as the Clippers or as the Lakers are. Take them seriously. So this was one of those games where you had a chance to come out, knock off a top-tier opponent, and really kind of generate some buzz for yourself, for your team, and they did just that. And James did it in an impressive fashion, dropping 47 points on the Clippers. Subsequently, I think his worst game of the season also came against the Clippers. So during that four-game losing stretch, right before the hiatus suspension went into effect, the Rockets played the Clippers and got absolutely throttled at home. In that game, James had 16 points, missed all 8 of his three-pointers, and shot just 4 of 17 overall. So there were a couple games that you could argue were maybe a bit worse than this one statistically, again, for James. But I think that the context behind this game meant so much. It was largely the biggest game of the season to that point. And had the Rockets won, you know, had they not lost that close one against the Knicks and then won this one against the Clippers, they would have been in position for the third seed. Instead, mid-suspension now, we're talking about the Rockets as the sixth seed in the Western Conference. So that is, you know, there were some pretty big consequences riding from the loss of this game. And his performance in it was so subpar. And again, I think that when James does struggle offensively, he gets inside his own head and doesn't try as hard or doesn't commit as much defensively. And I think we saw a lot of that during the four-game losing streak. And we've seen that throughout the season. The Rockets had a three-game losing streak early on. They had a four-game losing streak middle of the pack of the season. I think it was in January. And then they also had another four-game losing streak right there at the tail end before the suspension. So there's only been three bad losing streaks of the season, and then it's just been kind of a smattering of random losses here and there, most of, you know, a handful of which coming on the second nights of back-to-backs, where the games where, you know, Russell Westbrook doesn't play. There's been a handful of those as well, which you kind of count as just, okay, it's a schedule loss. So, but in those stretches, I think that one of the things that does impact the team more than anything else is, and this is the area that I wanted to say earlier that I think I wish James would hang his hat on a bit more, is being the leader of the team and everything that that encompasses. Because for 2 years, James had Chris Paul, who was, you know, everywhere Chris Paul's been, he's been the vocal leader of the team. And that's not naturally, that's not James's default setting. He isn't the vocal leader. He's the keep quiet, play by example type guy. And I think that 2 years with Chris Paul maybe helped him grow into that role a bit more, or, you know, see that role firsthand on how to be that type of guy, how to be that type of leader. And it's tough because, look, you look at Chris Paul. Chris Paul a lot of times rubs people the wrong way. And you're going to get that sometimes depending on, you know, who your leader, quote unquote, is and how they behave. But to me, it's about leading by example. And for James, there are too many times that I, you know, and it's not even that it happens like every few games, or there's too many times isolated in every single game of the season where he is taking plays off defensively, or, you know, a defensive breakdown happens and you watch James Harden, he, you know, raises his arms or, you know, is gesturing at somebody else. And, you know, not all those times are those breakdowns because of somebody else. And I do wish that just on that side of the basketball, because he does shoulder an immense load offensively, I get that. But there have been other guys, you know, other greats like James, who is going to go down as one of the greatest to ever play the game. There have been other greats like MJ, like the late Kobe Bryant, who shouldered an equal offensive load and still were absolute dogs on the defensive side of the basketball. Now, I'm not asking for James Harden to suddenly play DPOY caliber defense. What I am asking is for him to care more about that side of the basketball and realize that his efforts on that side can lead to good things offensively. And that's not isolated to James. That's the entire team as a whole. And I think part of that does fall on the coaching staff, on Mike D'Antoni for not placing more emphasis defensively. And we hear it all the time. We hear it in the post-game interviews. We hear it in the the halftime interview. Oh, well, you know, we're not getting into their bodies enough. We're, you know, the spirit is wrong. We're not trying defensively. And they can say all the right things. It's about going out there and doing the right things. It's about, you know, containing drives at the point of attack. It's about hustling that extra step. It's about, you know, jumping a little bit higher or boxing out so that the other team doesn't get that rebound. You know, paying attention instead of ball watching, not falling asleep, standing on the perimeter and letting a guy beat you, you know, off a backdoor cut for an easy two at the rim. Things like that. And it sounds like I'm going in really hard on James. And I think that's because as a guy who will go down as an all-time great, I have insanely high expectations for him. And I think everybody should. Now, does that mean I'm going to cut him some slack occasionally? Absolutely. He does do, you know, not everything offensively for this team, but this team does live and die by James Harden. And that is a huge weight to bear. But I do think that there is a bit more that he can offer the team on the defensive side of the basketball. And he does. We see it when the switches happen and he guards in the post. He's great. His on-ball defense is not phenomenal, but it's passable. I do think he's a bit easier to drive by than he should be. If that's my one true criticism of just an area that I really, truly think that he can improve upon that isn't just going to, you know, that isn't unrealistic, is I wish that he was better at containing driving lanes. Because now that the Rockets don't have a Clint Capella back there clogging up the paint, if a guy drives on James Harden, it seems really easy for anybody to beat James Harden off the dribble. And I don't know if that's because he's overcommitting on guarding the three and he doesn't want to sag too far off to give somebody an open look, whatever that may be, whether he's not shading players to the proper hand, you know, whatever the defensive instructions are behind the scenes as far as what the coaching staff is instructing him to do. I don't know what's going on there, but just eye test alone, it looks like James is very easy to beat off the dribble. So I'd like him to improve that. And this is an area too that we've already discussed this, right? I've kind of bludgeoned this one to death, so much so that I think it's, you know, I'm not going to take credit for David Fizdale talking about this on ESPN, or maybe I should, but whatever, is I think there's a legitimate case to be made against, or not against, but talking about the fact that James struggles in a five-out offense compared to a pick-and-roll heavy system. I think that James's bread and butter for the last 3-4 years has been pick-and-roll basketball with Clint Capella, and suddenly he doesn't have that anymore. Now, I made the argument that you can very easily replicate some of that with a role man that isn't Clint Capella, because they don't necessarily have to be quite the vertical lob threat that Capella was, but just having a role man on the way to the rim, somebody that the defense does have to account for to, you know, help get James's defender on his hip rather than constantly squared up with his shoulders in between James and the basket, I think that would be a huge help to James. So you can use guys like Jeff Green, Daniel House Jr., Robert Covington even, PJ Tucker can be a role man. Any of these guys can be role men. Now, are they going to be the vertical lob threat that Capella was? Not quite. Jeff Green, maybe a little bit. Daniel House, maybe a little bit. Maybe Covington in situational matchups, you know, depending on who's guarding those guys. I think any one of those three have the elevation and or the length to be able to get up and catch a lob pass over the top and provide that vertical spacing. Is it going to be quite as effective as Capella? No. Can it be useful? Absolutely. And then Ali Kambijani came out in his film study from The Athletic and highlighted some of those situations and said that, you know, yes, they are using Jeff Green as a bit more of a role man rather than strictly this pick and pop, continue the five out spacing with James on the court. And the slightly more unrealistic option is you play Isaiah Hartenstein 10 to 15 minutes a game, because that gives you a guy who can be a vertical lob threat and who has shown ability to finish around the basket. So if that's going to be I think that those two areas, the defensive side, just at the point of attack, containing drives would be area number one that I'd like to see him improve upon when he does come back. And then area two would be him to incorporate, or for the offense to incorporate, more pick and roll action so that James can get back to his version of attacking the basket, because he doesn't have that explosive first step that Russell Westbrook has. He doesn't seem to, I'm not going to say he doesn't have it, but he doesn't seem to have that desire to operate out of the post like Russell Westbrook does. Maybe if he were to include a couple more of those things in his repertoire of, you know, offensive skills, then I can't say those two things because he's not going to suddenly develop an explosive first step. I'm an idiot. Anyways, maybe if he were to incorporate the post game into his offensive repertoire, he would find a few more easier opportunities here and there to score the basketball, because again, operating out of the post like Westbrook does gives him the opportunity to abuse smaller guards or explode past bigger defenders and finish at the cup. Two things that James can very well do a lot of. I do think it's, you know, possibly wearing on him having to constantly attack the defense face up off the dribble. And I think that's why we see him reverting to that step back three a bit more than he has in the past. You know, his three-point attempts are just as high as they've ever been. They've taken a slight dip compared to his unguardable tour season last year, but they're still insanely high. It's like 13 attempts a game or something. I would really like to see him cut those three-point attempts down to about 10 or 11 a game and focus on getting the ball into the paint a bit more, or, and this is the one that I've hammered home too, incorporate just a little bit of mid-range. Just 2 to 3 a game. 2 to 3 mid-range shots to keep the defense honest. Because if James Harden suddenly started throwing in two or three mid-range jumpers a game, just the wide open ones, right? Because there's times when defenses give him that shot and he refuses to take it. So if he just started forcing defenses to keep him honest, keep defenses honest by taking that shot specifically, then I think it would open things up for him. And there have been a number of other people that have agreed with this point, so I'm going to die on that hill. Now, whether you guys enjoy that or not, then, you know, that remains to be seen. But those are my areas that I'd like him to improve on. And it's just the last one, which I think is unrealistic at this point because he is who he is, would be playing a bit more off ball, you know, because Westbrook can't play off ball. And that's the thing, is Russell Westbrook cannot be a guy to run around a couple screens a game and catch and shoot a three-pointer, you know, without even dribbling the ball once. He can't be that guy. And I think for this pairing of Russell Westbrook and James Harden to work moving forward, James does have to incorporate a bit more off ball into his game. And I'm hopeful that this offseason, whenever it may be, post coronavirus, so, you know, we're talking an offseason of September, October, November, whatever it may be, I'm hopeful that in that offseason, James and Russ having a complete summer to work together will unlock even more potential between these two guys, in the sense that Russ is best with the ball in his hands. That's it. And I think Russ, and I'll focus in on this a bit more when I do the little player capsule on Russell Westbrook, but I think Russ has incorporated his version of being able to play off ball, in the sense that he's never going to catch and shoot, but he does slash occasionally, and he does seem to have really gotten comfortable with the ability to catch the ball, and literally a fraction of a second later after catching the ball, he's already on the move with a decisive, you know, drive to the basket or a dribble hesitation move and then a pull up from mid-range, whatever it may be. He knows exactly what he's going to do the moment he grabs the ball, and that's not quite as good as a player who can catch and shoot and stretch the defense from three, but it's his version of catching and shooting, or his version of being ready to play in an off-ball sense, because James will kick in the ball and he's attacking a defense that has, you know, been had all five sets of eyes focused on what James Harden is doing. So it allows him a split second to attack a, you know, not scattered defense, but catch a defense off guard. And so that's not quite as good, again, as, you know, the ability to play off ball, which I think James has that ability. But I do commend Russell Westbrook for the steps and the strides that he's taken as a Rocket. And again, I'll focus on Westbrook in an entire pod down the line eventually. But for James and for, you know, this potential season, when, or, you know, I'm not going to say if, but when it returns, those are the areas that I'd like to see him improve on. And largely, I've been impressed with this season to this point. There was somebody who made a point on Twitter, and I don't know who it was, and I kind of want to debunk it, in that somebody did say that James maybe had his funk in January, or, you know, just the ups and downs that we've seen from him kind of in the calendar year of 2020 is because he's no longer in the MVP discussion. And I think that's just BS, honestly. I don't think James is that much of a prima donna or that egotistical that, you know, just because this is the first year in a long time that he hasn't been at least in the race for the MVP award, I don't think that's going to impact his play. I think there were a number of factors, mostly probably physical, that, you know, it's really tough to imagine. If you go back and look at his averages again from November and December, it's insane to think that anybody could pull that off. And it's insane to expect that from him for an entire season. Now, granted, for him to crater like he did in January isn't ideal either. I'd like, you know, ideally a middle ground of consistent play. But I don't think it's because he's not in the MVP race. I think that's just a silly accusation. And I think that every player has their slumps, and we've just been truly graced by a player that has, A, largely been an Iron Man in his time with the Rockets, and B, has played some otherworldly basketball in a Rockets jersey for years. And so when he finally came back down to earth for about a month, it just didn't look so great, because it's a system built entirely around him playing like an MVP. So when he was playing like a, you know, B-tier role player, things didn't look that great. So I think that I just wanted to debunk that one, because I thought that was a little silly. But I think that's where we'll kind of wrap things up for. Yeah, I think that's a good spot. So as always, I appreciate you guys listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.